You're listening to the premier podcast for professional leaders by other professionals. We're going to be talking to the best of the biz about what they've learned along the way in their careers. We'll be giving you easy to understand tips that you can take and impact your business. Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of 3 for 3. I'm your host, Kurt Clyden. And today's conversation, today's topic relates to thinking about yourself as a leader, thinking about how you articulate your goals and understand what you want to accomplish in life. And right now we're in a period of time where transition is happening because of changes in political leadership, changes in our health systems and the pandemic and how things are affected by that. People are looking and reevaluating their lives and where they want to go and understanding who they really are. So I've got a very special guest today, Dennis Clyden, who is a designer. And you're going to get an in-depth idea of what that really means here in just a moment. But let me give you a little bit of background about him first. Dennis grew up in Chicago, and he's really always had a sense for creativity, whether that's as a fine artist or as a functional artist, such as studies such as architecture. His career has included education, where he was a professor of graphic design at the University of Akron for more than 3 decades. He's an entrepreneur, his first venture being Designer Grids, which were tools that helped designers and engineers create 3-point perspective drawings. And as a business owner, he's the founder of the Clyden Companies, a marketing communications firm in Akron, Ohio. In the past few years, Dennis has turned his attention to abstract expressionist painting, and he's enjoyed tremendous success in galleries that have ranged across the U.S., from New York City to Miami to Phoenix to Los Angeles. As an extension of this creative output, he's in one of the final stages of a book called Unleashing Your Imagination, which is really going to be the framework for today's conversation. The book is a self-improvement styled guide that helps readers create the life that they really want and how to think about that. But I should mention this is a special episode for me because Dennis is also my father. So it's an honor and privilege to have him on the show. So without further ado, Dad, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kurt. Pleasure being here. Looking forward to a good conversation.
So I want to jump into this and let you talk about it because I know there's a lot here that is going to be useful to cover. But what we want to do is we're going to provide 3 tips about how people can make, how they can think about the important choices and the concepts in leading a successful life. How they can establish that framework. And you know, you're in a stage of life where you don't want to call it retirement, but you're past what would be maybe the traditional concept of a working life, and now we're looking at different parts of it. But when we've talked about this, this is not necessarily a topic of conversation that are people that are in that stage of their life. This can be really anywhere you are. I think as a professional or as someone that wants to contribute not only to the greater world but to their one's own identity and success. So if you would tell us what would be the first of those important concepts for that question of leading a successful life.
Well, the first thing, Kurt, I think is just absolutely vital is the awareness that we are responsible for our own life. We are the designers of our life. Our future depends on our decisions, not somebody else's, not somebody else's plan. You know, a lot of people live life, somebody else's life, a life that someone else told them to live. Maybe it was a mentor, maybe a friend. Maybe you emulated someone else's direction in life. But really, to be able to achieve your own personal fulfillment, you've got to design your own life, make your own decisions. We have that right. We have that responsibility to do that. So that's the first thing I think that is extremely, extremely important. I began my interest in life planning and self-improvement and the study of positive psychology through listening to the Nightingale Conant audio tapes many, many decades ago. And I probably have a library of 50 sets of audio tapes from people like Stephen Covey and Brian Tracy and Jim Rohn, Dennis Waitley, Wayne Dyer, all of these modern day psychologists who are involved with teaching you how to live a good life, a life that that is filled with achievement, but also how to live a good life. And I began that, I'd say, many decades ago. Went on to study with Dick Zalak, who had an organization called Focus 4 in Cleveland. And his whole concept was developing a balance in your life between business life, personal life, and, of course, a lot of planning along the way. I remember one of his famous quotes as being, you can have anything you want in life, but not everything. Well, that quote really implies you've got to make some decisions. You can't have everything. You can have anything, but not everything. So it's time to make some decisions. It's time to design your life. It's time to make that plan that you do, not somebody else. From that particular course that I studied for about 7 years with Dick, we had kind of a splinter group that four of us branched off, and four of us students, we went into a separate group. We met every month for about 2-3 hours, and we continued on discussing the after effects of the Focus 4 group. This was an excellent, excellent group because we were able to discuss our concerns, our problems, our insights and opportunities with people of our own, at our own level, CEOs or business owners. We hired a person called Laurie Zuckerman, who was our coach for that that group. And one of the things that got me involved with the book that I'm writing was her recommendation to take a course at Harvard University called Unlocking Your Immunity to Change. This was an excellent course. But as I reflect back on it, it was a course that made you study what had transpired already in your life, to look back, to see the problems, the anxieties, the difficulties that you went through, and then based on that, to affect change in the future. Well, the book that I'm writing really deals more with looking forward, rather than backward, to see what the possibilities would be in the future of your life. You know, as a designer, one of the most beautiful things that I have is a fresh sheet of paper, tabula rasa, where you can imagine, you can dream, you can put anything on that piece of paper, whether it's a building you're designing, a trademark you're designing, or maybe a fresh piece of paper for a writer to write their story, to write their ideas. So my book that, you know, deals with dreams and fantasies, it dreams with unleashing your feelings, discovering your purpose, understanding your current reality, but then also creating with a new spirit and a new vision, a life that is going to be a fulfillment of everything that you desire and everything that you dream.
Can I ask you a question here?
Yeah, you bet.
We talked a little bit in the introduction about who this topic is good for. Do you see, is there a life point, a life change, is there a time in one's life when someone should look at this? Do you see it as being more applicable to someone getting started in a career, someone at the end of their career, someone that feels like they are stuck in a rut and they can't get out of where they're at, somewhere in the middle there? And if so, is do you reevaluate this on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, good question, Kurt. The title of the book is Unleash Your Imagination. And, you know, when would one receive an advantage by unleashing their imagination? Most any time in life, primarily at major turning points. when you graduate from high school or college, or when you're just married, when you have your first child, when you start your first job, when you make a change in job, midlife crisis, certainly retirement, all of these times in life are times when you need to rethink, because change happens. Things occur where you need to modify your roadmap and go a different direction. And that's what my thinking is all about right now. And, you know, where I think this book can help direct people. One of the people that had a big influence on my philosophy is Buckminster Fuller. When I was teaching at the University of Akron, we invited Buckminster Fuller to speak to a small group of professors and advanced students. And we met over at the Martin Center and sat in one of the living rooms there. He sat in a nice overstuffed easy chair, and we all sat along the floor listening to his philosophy. He spoke for about 2 hours, and it was just absolutely fascinating to hear such a great thinker of his stature talk about the future of our world, the future of our society. And one of the things that he left me with, which I think about every day, is a quote that he made. And let me use this quote. "You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete." I think that is just a fantastic quote and a fantastic philosophy. So many people go through life complaining about their current situation, their job, their family, their lack of finances, their whatever it might be. Complain, complain, complain. No, follow Buckminster Fuller's philosophy. Never change things by fighting the existing reality. Change it. Make a model that is so good that it makes your current situation obsolete. And that's designer's thinking. Create your life. Create your own design for living. Create your own design for life. It's your responsibility. And if you do that, a lot of the anxieties, a lot of the complaints, a lot of the problems are going to disappear and go away. During the research that I've been doing, I read 70 or 80 books on the topics of self-improvement and positive psychology. And I can't reinforce enough one of the recommendations I would have, and that is to, at any stage of life, whether it's right after college, midlife, or when you're 80 years old, read, 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 attend workshops, attend seminars. Lifelong learning goes right hand in hand with lifelong planning. So back to your question, Kurt. What is the right time to study your life, to read a book like I have here and so many of the other books that I've read? What is a good time? Anytime, every time, whatever age you're at. You know, I heard a quote that something like 50-60% of people after they graduate college never read another book again. That's unbelievable. That's just unbelievable. We have a mind. We have we have our thinking to be able to learn all through our entire life. And I think that is just one of the most important messages I can leave with you. Never stop learning. I've learned more in the last 3 years with this research I've been doing than I have quite a bit of my life. I've read books by people like Sean Aker and Martin Seligman and Simon Sinek, all of these contemporary philosophers. I've read books like from Bill Burnett, Designing Your Life. And an interesting quote that Burnett has is, "The circumstances in your life are constantly changing. Therefore, when we redesign our life, we design it for the next phase or the next step. It is not a blueprint for eternity. It is only a plan for perhaps the next few years." This makes it a lot less challenging. You know, oftentimes when I talk with people, they say, "My gosh, I have to redesign my whole life. How can I do that?" Well, it makes it a little bit easier to have the knowledge that, no, you're just going to redesign the next phase of your life, because 2 years from now, 3 years from now, things change and you change with it. It's a constant reevaluation of who you are, where you're going, and where you set your goals.
I don't want to oversimplify this, but do you think it's fair to say that the reason that most people don't go through this process is that they are scared of change? Because when we talk about the continuing to educate yourself, continuing to read books, learn new things, yes, it's learning and it's educating, but it's also changing who you are and what you previously thought is your reality. Because you're talking about, you're changing your personality. You have to keep growing to get what you want. And it is the fact that we know that people are afraid of change. Do you think that's a main reason why someone might not go through this?
Yes. Yeah. Change is scary. Change is scary. The current reality is comfortable. You can't achieve things by being comfortable. You have to push yourself. You never set a goal for yourself that you know you can achieve. If you do, it takes all the fun out of it. Set goals for yourself that you have no idea how you can achieve, because it'll force you and push you along the way to become a more knowledgeable person, a more educated person, a person with experience that you've gained through the process of research and discovery and investigation. So it's that element of curiosity that you have to build into your life. It's that open-mindedness that you have to be able to be so curious that you are going to go and investigate. You are going to investigate the new, and you're going to stretch your imagination and your goals so far that you're going to achieve things that you never thought you could possibly do.
It reminds me, I was listening to a speaker recently, and he was making a metaphor for where you want to live your life. And when you first learned how to swim and you went out into the ocean, you went into a lake, and you would wander off and you'd walk a little bit further, and you could still touch the bottom of the ground or the sand. And then you would get to that point where you just couldn't touch with your feet anymore, and you would be swimming. You'd be just past that, but you're not comfortable. When you're still with your feet on the ground, you're safe. If you go too far out, you're in danger. But you live kind of on that precipice of where you're not quite sure what's going to happen next. You still can get to safety, but you have to rely upon whatever you've learned to keep surviving. I thought that was interesting, an interesting way of putting where you want to position yourself that's not comfortable enough. It reminds me of what you talk about when you say, if you set your goals of something that you know you can achieve, well, that's boring. So,
right. You've got to challenge yourself, whether it be in your personal life or in your business life. You've got to take chances. You've got to take risks. Otherwise, it's the same old system that you've been working with for however many years. So in order to grow, you can't be doing the same thing that you've always been doing. You've got to set new goals. You know, one of the things in the book that I'm writing that I think is really important is to be able to understand yourself. And in some of the chapters, I deal with understanding your feelings, understanding your values, and how that influences the things that you do. Let me give you a little ladder here of concepts and progressions. Our feelings govern our values. Our feelings are the most important thing that we have. They govern everything that we do. But they govern your values, and our values influence our beliefs. And our beliefs help establish our principles. And our principles shape our purpose. Our purpose helps determine our mission in life. And our mission helps establish our goals. Our goals then govern our actions. You see where our goals are? A lot of people, even a lot of coaches say, set goals, set goals, set goals. Wait a second. wait, we're putting the horse before the cart here. In order to set goals, we have to understand why. Why we're setting goals. What we're going to achieve by that. We've got to go back to make sure that we have praxis or congruency in our life. And that means our values and our actions are parallel, are working to reinforce each other. So when I say we got to start with our feelings, you know, how do we want to feel in life? It's not, you know, where do I want to go? What goal do I want to set? No. How do you want to feel? Do you want to feel peaceful in all of your relationships? Do you want to feel intellectually challenged? Do you want to feel excited about the day and about the future? That's what drives what you want to accomplish. You know, I really believe a lot in writing things down and establishing lists. If you make out a list, you write it down, you're more likely you're going to accomplish something. But a lot of people do what I call the Saturday morning to-do list. That's not too important, because usually that means, you know, I'm going to write down on this piece of paper, I got to get a haircut, I got to mow the lawn, I got to take out the garbage, I got to do the wash, I got to, all these different things. And once you do that, you may have gotten your garbage out and your haircut, but so what? What's more important? Why don't we start with developing a list on whatever day it is of how do you want to feel? Now, maybe it's, I want to feel intellectually challenged. What does that lead to? It may lead to the second list, which is, what do you want to accomplish? I want to research and write a book on maybe religious architecture in France. Okay, that's another list. That comes after the feelings list. What comes after the accomplishment list? Well, maybe that's where we get down into the weeds and we talk about the to-do list. Because if we want to do research and write this book on architecture in France, then we better start by going to see the travel agent, getting the maps, getting information about France. That's the to-do list, you see. And so I would encourage everyone to establish goals that are so far-reaching that they deal with your feelings, second, your accomplishments, and then the how-tos, that is, to do list.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of looking at that. I would never get the garbage taken out or my hair cut, but...
but what's more important?
Right.
What's more important, your life, your legacy, your achievements, or the garbage? Or what if your hair grew another inch?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Right.
If you were driven by a mission and a purpose that was so far-reaching that it would be significant for you and for others that you're associated with.
So I'm gonna bring this that's a lot to unpack, and we're gonna have a lot of this in some of the show notes that people can come back and reference. But that first component of it is the designing your life and, well, what we just talked about. So let's transition into the second part. What's the second tip you have?
Well, the second part was to deal with the problems that you are facing. You know, problems are not anybody else's, they're yours. You perceive the problems, you're affected by the problems, so you have to control the problems. A lot of people complain about, you know, my boss is this, and this coworker I'm with is that, and I don't have enough time for this. Well, that's your problem. Figure it out. You're the designer of your life. You're the one that makes the decisions. So I would suggest, as I do in the book that I'm writing, and I think it's the fourth chapter, make a list of all your responsibilities. Make a list of the problems that you're facing, the people who are getting in your way of succeeding. List out the things that you do not enjoy doing in your life, the things that annoy you, things that you want to stop doing. You know, you can't start doing something unless you stop doing something beforehand. List the things that you're afraid of that bring you fear. And list the things that get in the way of your happiness. Now, if you can do that, then look at these lists in each of the six categories or seven categories of your life. And that is, what are the problems you're facing in your personal life? your professional life, your family, your cultural life, problems you're facing with your health, your spiritual life, maybe your financial life. Categorize the problems that you're perceiving into these different categories. Then ask yourself the question, why is it a problem? Why is it a problem? Why and how important is it to solve this problem? How is it having a detrimental effect on your life? Sometimes a problem really isn't a problem until you start answering those questions and realize sometimes maybe it's not as big a problem as I thought it would be. So surface those problems that you perceive in each of the categories, list them, put them into a priority order, and then take problem number one, the most important problem, and solve it.
Do you think that you need to understand your problems before you can start the design process of it? I mean, you led with designing your life, and now we're talking about identifying the problems. How important is it to shed the things that are bothering you before you can move on?
Well, in the book that I'm writing, Kurt, I start with dreams and desires because that's the fun part. That's the fun part of living and planning for the future. And it's only until we get to the understanding of who you are, your feelings, your interests, your values, your principles. When you understand that, then I introduce the aspect of problems. But yes, you do have to deal with your problems. And there's different things you can do with problems. You can try to solve them. You can try to fix them. You can change the problem. You can ignore the problem. You can give it to somebody else. That's always fun. You can tolerate it. You can change your perception of the problem. You can wait for it to go away. You can eliminate the problem. Or maybe you just accept the problem and live with it. So lots of different approaches to solving a problem. But if a problem is inhibiting you from moving forward, it's got to be solved.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay, well, if that's our second component, let's come around. What's our third?
Well, you know, I like to look at life in three phases. There's the phase of education and learning. And that generally takes you from, you know, your kindergarten years, maybe even earlier, preschool, on through to your years in college and your first several years on the job. These are all the learning phase. The second phase is the production phase or the working phase, where you are providing a service to your company or the company that you're working for. And it's you're using all of your talents and your skills to help produce a good business for the company you're working for. But I think the most important phase is the last phase, and that is the enlightenment phase. And that last phase can happen lots of different times during your life. It's when you have that aha moment that you begin to realize something has changed. I begin to realize that there's something new happening here. And all of the learning, all of the life experience is coming together to give you realizations that you may not have had before. One of the authors I dearly love is Thomas More. I met Thomas More at the Unicorn Historical Writers Conference in New York about a year ago, and he was one of the speakers. We had a good chance to talk on several occasions. Thomas More is the author of Care of the Soul, a very popular book. He's written over 20 books in his lifetime. Thomas is 80 years old right now, and he's still writing and he's still producing. But one of the things he quoted in one of his books was, I like to think of retirement as a time to retire, RE-TIRE. In other words, to put on new tires, to tune up your engine, and to create a new roadmap for life. This can happen any time in life, but it's especially important for those who are thinking about or leading into retirement, because it's not a time to kick back sit on the sofa, watch television, do nothing. Goals can happen all through your life. I think of people like Frank Lloyd Wright, who worked until the day before he died at 92 years old, designed over 1,000 structures in his lifetime, and still working until that very last day before he died. I think of one of his students, Vernon Swayback. Vernon was a student of Wright's, and Vernon says, our profession is our life. His quote in one of his books is, he said, there is no after school or after class in Wright's school. It's 24/7. You make a commitment to your mission, to your purpose, to your profession, and it's your life. Swayback is still designing at his architectural firm in Scottsdale in his mid-80s. I think of people like Jimmy and Rosalind Carter, who continue to volunteer into their 90s for their mission to support and work for Habitat Humanity, for humanity. We can go on and on and on with professionals, with perhaps political leaders. Look at right now, we have a president-elect who is in his late 70s, ready to take on the responsibilities of the world. Quite a commitment. So in my opinion, Kurt, there is no such thing as retirement. It's just another phase of life when you have the opportunity to do something good, to use your talents, to use your professional experience, and to make a commitment to a far-reaching goal that can have a tremendous effect on leaving your legacy. So to me, there's no downtime. We have been given our life, our mind, our talents, and we need to use them until the very, very last day on earth.
Well, I think for those listening to this, if you're not thinking about these things and starting to think about this, hopefully this is a chance to reevaluate and get some things down on paper and understand where you're headed. You know, this podcast is often dedicated, sometimes specifically, to business practices and learning more about branding or marketing or running a successful business. And this is something that we've really not covered too much on the show, but it's so important to understand, whether it's for your personal life or whether it's for you as a professional leader. I think it's fair to say that if you go through these same practices, these same motions, as a leader in your organization, you can still accomplish the things that you want to, those same goals that you have. You think that the one-to-one comparison of how you use this within your life and how you use this as a professional leader are similar?
Absolutely, Kurt. I used the word praxis and congruency a little bit earlier, where your beliefs and values are in alignment with your actions. Your life is your business. Your business is your life. There's no separation between the two. Your purpose is your life. Your mission is your life. Your life is your mission. It all ties together. The more you can bring all these elements into harmony, the happier you're going to be. Happiness is not found down the way. Happiness is now. It's the way. As Wayne Dyer would say, and Thich Nhat Hanh would say, the very famous Buddhist monk, who I dearly love reading, it's feeling comfortable, it's feeling happiness, it's feeling content in your current moment. That's what we all need to achieve.
Well, thank you for being on the show today. Can you tell us, we've got a few questions here,
okay,
to end the show with a little bit of fun. But before we get into that, for listeners out there that would like to learn more about your artwork or your book that you're working on, how can they do that?
Well, I refer to a lot of reading that I've done. I have a reading list in the back section of my book of about 60, 70 books that I think are very important. I would be happy to send that to anyone who would like to see that list. If you just, you can contact me at dennis@clydon.com, K-L-E-I-D-O-N, dennis@clydon.com. I'll be happy to send that to you, because I want to share this information. The reason I'm writing the book is to be able to help other people improve their life and make it more meaningful.
That sounds good.
I also am represented by the Walter Wickeser Gallery in New York City, and I'll be having a virtual show, one of the first ones he's done, coming up January 2nd. And if you go to the Walter Wickeser, W-I-C-K-I-S-E-R Gallery, come January the 2nd, you'll have a link on his website right on the first page to go to the gallery that will be showing 20 of my paintings. I'm excited about that, because with a digital impact here, the show will go all over the world and to thousands and thousands of people and museums and art buyers.
So speaking of museums and art, let's have a little bit of fun.
Okay.
And there's my segue, because I know that one of the people that has inspired you, and you mentioned him on this conversation here, is Frank Lloyd Wright.
Right.
Been a major influence in your life in a lot of different ways. And of course, Frank Lloyd Wright was behind the Guggenheim, which is a famous art museum out there. And therein explains my segue.
Okay.
So I have three questions for you
about
Frank Lloyd Wright. Of course, everyone knows him, probably the most famous architect, particularly U.S. American architect. But he also dabbled in other designs at times. So which of the following did Frank Lloyd Wright do from a design perspective? Was he involved also with automobile design, coming up with a concept for Ford? Or was he involved with fashion design, particularly in dresses for women? Or was he involved with boat design, coming up with the first idea for a catamaran? Which of those was he involved with? Automobile, fashion, or boat?
Well, I think I recall seeing an automobile that he designed. So I would say the first one.
Well, maybe he did, and maybe I'm wrong, but he also actually did quite a few dresses for women. He was involved with fashion design.
Oh, yeah.
Well, here's the second question. So Frank Lloyd Wright was also very passionate about fine art, and he was actually considered a dealer in artwork. Did you happen to know this?
Maybe.
So this will be interesting. So which of the following styles was he a specialist when it came to dealing in artwork? Was it Japanese block prints, or was it European landscape paintings, or was it South American primitive sculptures?
It was the first one.
The Japanese block prints. That's correct. They even say that he probably made more money as an art dealer of Japanese wood prints than he did in his architecture business.
You know, Frank Lloyd Wright was a designer of so many things. That's why it's very hard to limit it. He's also a furniture designer, and two pieces of his furniture sit in my gallery in Phoenix, Arizona, which I'm very proud of, and I see every day when I'm out there, and it makes me enjoy what he enjoyed in his design. He doesn't stop designing anywhere, I don't think, or he didn't, I should say.
Yeah, probably true. All right, so let's round it off with the third question here. So Wright's son, John Lloyd Wright. Are you familiar with John?
Mm-hmm.
So he also had his own claim to fame. And he invented a toy that millions of children have played with. Which toy did John Lloyd Wright create? Was it the Slinky? Was it the Rubik's Cube? Or was it Lincoln Logs?
Well, I don't think it was the Slinky. Lincoln Logs go way back in history. So I might want to say the Rubik's Cube.
Well, they actually, it was the Lincoln Logs.
Was it really?
He invented the Lincoln Logs.
I mean,
yeah.
I played with Lincoln Logs when I was a youngster, and my gosh.
Okay. Well, your logic is there. I wonder if he established the brand of the Lincoln Logs. You know,
okay,
there probably
yeah.
was something that was a predecessor
yeah,
to it
yeah.
beforehand, but he's actually behind Lincoln Logs. Well, hopefully you enjoyed some of those questions.
I thought you were going to ask when. You know, when did Frank Lloyd Wright die, and certain buildings that he designed, but those were good ones. Okay.
Well, good. Well, thank you for being on the show today, and I hope that the listeners out there got a lot from this.
Well, thanks, Kurt. I appreciate it. It's been a joy to work on this new direction in my life, involving developing my thoughts for the book. And having so much research and reading that I've been doing, that kind of brings a lot of things together. And I hope that I'll be able to share that with folks here coming up soon. I'm completed with the writing of it. It's being edited right now, and hopefully be ready to go sometime in the first part of the year.
That sounds great. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Kurt.
3 for 3 is produced by the marketing experts at Clyden & Associates. Clyden is a full-service marketing agency that has been bringing ideas to life for over 45 years. Head to Clyden.com to see their work and learn more.